Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Well, we do have a vibrant, it's a diverse population in Montana. I think we know it's trending a little bit older. Estimates are that 43% of Montanans make up that 50-plus crowd. That is up from about 35% in 2010. So those are things that we know. What are the priorities of the 50-plus crowd in Montana? They're going to be the same as everyone else. They're going to be property taxes. They're going to be health care. They're going to be taking care of the family. They're going to be taking care of the community. We're live at the state capitol today. We're going to explore those issues at length with lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. Representative Lou Jones will kick us off here. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte will stop by. Tim Summers, State Director of AARP Montana, co-hosting today as it is Fighting for the 50-plus crowd at the capitol, hosted by AARP Montana on Voices of Montana. Appreciate you joining us here as well as we are live in the rotunda here at the state capitol. A lot of things going on as usual at the state capitol. Today, though, there is a group here and a lot, there'll be volunteers here as well. It'll be going on all day that's fighting for the 50-plus crowd. And if it's one thing that I learned, it's that as you look at the policies that are advocated by folks like AARP Montana and others, those are the policies that when they trickle down, they hurt. They help everybody. When we're talking about property taxes, if you're protecting those of low income, well, then you're protecting the 50-plus crowd at times as well. So we'll talk about that as we move along here. But let's get moving along. Tim Summers joins us, State Director of AARP Montana. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Tom, and thanks for having us. This is great.
Thank you
for being here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an honor to have alongside Representative Lou Jones here today as well. He's a veteran of a number of sessions as well, and Lou has spent a lot of time in public policy and in public service in Montana. And Representative Jones, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, much appreciated.
Enjoy being here.
You've done a lot of work over the years. Have you? Do you stand back sometimes and think about that?
Oh, well, I began when I wasn't part of the 50-plus crowd. Now I look in the mirror and recognize that I'm securely in that block. And so, yep, over time, we've done a lot of work, tried to make a difference for Montana, and I believe we've done some good things as well.
I agree completely. Tim, why don't you talk about what this day is all about?
Sure.
And then welcome Representative Jones.
Absolutely. So today is Fighting for the 50-plus Day at the Capitol. AARP, the area agencies on aging, and other groups, Alzheimer's Association, et cetera, Big Sky 55, et cetera, they're all here as well. And we're bringing a unified voice that the 50-plus, there's a lot of us out there, right?
43%.
You know, when I first came to Montana 10 years ago, I moved up here from Wyoming, and I officially became an AARP member then. And now I am, like Representative Jones, I am solidly in that camp. So, you know, Tom, you mentioned earlier, more and more Montana's population is graying, right? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is this last election, we had over 65, I believe it was between 65 and 67% of the total electorate, the folks that cast their vote, were age 50 and older. Mm-hmm. And yep, it's a very important voting constituency, and it's a group that needs to be paid attention to. So,
Representative Jones, I'm going to ask you the question that I hear a lot when we talk about senior advocates and the 50-plus crowd, is that when you create policies that benefit them, there's a wide range of benefit to policies like that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, we try to focus on those policies that, or in particular I do, that benefit, well, everybody from 18 years old to 100, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to make sure that Montanans benefit from their tax policy, from their choices that we make that impact how they live and what taxes they pay.
House Bill 231. Now, we talk about it. We do a legislative report. That's the major property tax, one of the major pieces, but it's got across the finish line. It's one that you, as a member of the Property Tax Task Force, had looked at and saw this is something that we can approach in Montana. That got over the line last week. Congratulations on that, a bill that you carried. Talk about the work that went into it. Talk about how you feel that's going to benefit.
Well, House Bill 231, the Montana, it's always all about the land, right? For years, we were either selling natural resources, we were selling our mining, our oil, our production, our farming. Well, we're still all about the land. But what's happening in Montana, we're now selling scenery. We're selling vacation homes. There's 12.5 tourists for every one Montanan to come through here. But we're not a state whose tax system deals with the tourism very well. Mm-hmm. And so when we took a look at this, we recognized that the average Montanan, the person living here, was paying out of their one pocket income tax, out of their other pocket property tax. But a lot of those folks that are coming in weren't participating in the income tax, right? They simply weren't part of that system. Now, people say, so what? But the income tax pays for things like our fire fund, for our schools, for our corrections. We benefit not having serial killers on the street, and I'm sure a vacation home does as well. But these folks weren't participating. So House Bill 231 became a conversation about, given this out-of-date demand, this forcing up of values across the state on housing affordability, how did we create a bill that brought some of those folks that were receiving services paid for by income tax but not paying them to the table to help buy down the cost of Montanans that were paying, you know, hardworking Montanans paying out of both pockets. And so it's not trying to be disrespectful to out-of-state folks. We're glad they're here. Mm-hmm. But it's saying that, you know, maybe Montanans shouldn't pay for all your services. You should participate as well. And so House Bill 231, with its mechanism, captures money from some of the short-term rentals, from the vacation homes, and it uses these money to buy down owner dwellings, the property taxes on 230,000 owner dwellings, the 130,000 long-term rentals, because workforce needs a place to live as well, yeah. And 32,000 small businesses. Because if we can help those folks, those Montanans that are paying income tax and property tax, we can make our state stronger and be respectful to all age groups, but in particular, those residents that have been living in their homes a long time.
I think a telling statistic in that is one that you gave on the floor. I think it's 20 to 25% of our property tax bills are mailed out of state.
They do. 23% of all of our taxable value is mailed to an out-of-state address. And it grows about 1% a year and has for the last several years.
Yeah.
And again, so a lot of our ownership is from out-of-state, and it's bidding up our internal values. And I've got nothing against somebody having a short-term rental, but truthfully, that's bidding up homes in our neighborhoods. And so I just feel that they can be, you know, they're basically mini hotels in most cases, and that they should be in a similar tax rate as a mini hotel so that they can, again, help the owner dwellings that are trying to live here and be here and exist here pay a little less.
Tim?
You know, seniors... they're finding themselves in a interesting situation where so many of them have been in their homes for 30, 40 years, right? And or more. Mm-hmm. And what they're finding is that they are house rich and cash poor. As property values keep going up, they can't afford those values. And meeting their property tax obligations is really becoming burdensome. We think that House Bill 231 really starts to address this, and we are in full support of it, and we're going to be working throughout the session to make sure it gets across the line.
Do you have and I could give the cliff notes on it, but Representative Jones is with us here. He chairs the House Appropriations Committee, serves House District 18, a number of legislative sessions underneath his belt for the Conrad area and those folks in that area. You know, I would need to give a little bit of the highlights, the talking points on this bill, and then I got a question about what else might work with this piece of legislation.
So House Bill 231 creates a homestead exemption. And so that gives you a 0.9% rate up to about $180,000. It gives you a 1.1% rate up to about $1.2 million, and then the rate goes up thereafter. What that does then is for the vast majority of Montana homes, it creates a pretty significant property tax cut over what they would pay. For example, if you're in the bottom end of the homes, it's about 24%. And the next step up, it's about 18%. So obviously it's going to be a function of both where you are. Every county's different, mm-hmm. right? Some counties did not see market value explosions, in particular in the eastern portion of the state. But it'll be a function of where you are and what is the valuation of your home. And so it does help protect those seniors. That program, and combined with some other, the PTAP, some other the targeted programs, does give our seniors a significant possibility of having lower taxes on their homes.
To go into that a little bit, Daniels County from 2010 to 2020, their increases were only 2% median
yes.
value. You look at Fallon County, it's a 5% increase. Other areas, Maher County was 64% around White Sulphur
yep.
Springs. You
yep.
might not, I mean, we talk about Gallatin County, you know, the median price of a home there at $650,000, but a 59% increase or more in property taxes over that time. So, and there's going to be another increase as well because they're going to reassess property taxes. So it's those counties that are probably going to get hit with maybe a 10 to 11% or so increase in property taxes. What do we do now? Okay, I think there's a lot of people that have said House Bill 231 is a good bill. You said yourself it's not perfect. And there are other things out there. What can work well with 231 to try and address this?
So I believe a ton of the targeted programs help, right, where they targeted those folks that are lower income so that can help those homeowners that have been in those houses 30 years. And we have some of those circuit breakers in place now, although their dials could be tweaked. The challenge we have is all property taxes go local.
Absolutely.
And so yep. It provides the local government services, the ambulances, the fire trucks, the water, the sewer that we all depend upon. And so as we look at supplying these services, we've got to remember that they have to be funded as well. The state government does not run on property tax. It actually runs primarily on income tax. So the trick is, how do we fund those services we need, keep the growth capped so it's not out of range, but do so in a manner that doesn't become too painful to residents to bear? In a state that's still a natural resource state, we're just mm-hmm. selling scenery mm-hmm. and we're selling beauty, in particular yeah. where the trees are. What made 231 so difficult to draft is, if you're not careful, a fix for the Gallatin, as you brought them up, can be destructive to Daniels or Richland. So you have to make sure that the bill has its both a homestead, a comstead, and an agstead in it. Otherwise, all you do is directly transfer obligation to either agriculture
yep.
or business.
Yeah.
And I doubt anyone wants their little homes cafe to go out of business on Main Street. They like their businesses. You know, we were and are a natural resource state, but our challenge is, when you think about why so much tax has moved to residential, well, the coal strips are closed. There's all the timber mills tend to be gone, right? What are there, 3 or 4 left? And as yep. we continue to move, and sometimes from lawsuits, sometimes for other reasons, we move away from having kind of an industrial tax base and move more and more to residential, it becomes increasingly difficult to create a bill that treats everybody responsibly. And it's going to cost more money to put a blade in a snowplow, so we all get to pay a little more. It's just, how do we make sure that it's within reason?
Welcome back. We're live at the Capitol Rotunda. It's the 50-plus day here, fighting for the 50-plus at the Capitol from AARP Montana. Tom Schultz alongside, and welcome back to Voices of Montana. As I noted earlier, our population aging an awful lot, 43% of our population, the 53-plus or 50-plus crowd. Last census, it was in 2010, 35%. So an aging population. And so how are we addressing issues that further their benefit as well? Tim Summers is with us, State Director of AARP Montana, and joined now by Montana Governor Greg Gianforte. Governor, good
hey.
Good
Tom,
to see you.
Welcome to the People's House.
Thank
it's
you.
Good to see you here.
It is good to be here. I've been watching it on TV ever since the first of the month, you know, first of January.
Good. So. Well, there's a lot of good work going on. We're making progress. The clock is ticking for, as you noted, for all of us.
Yeah.
But also on the legislature.
Yeah. We just, Representative Lou Jones chairs the House Appropriations Committee, a public servant for years in the People's House here. So I want to just make sure I appreciate that again. 231, that House bill, when you put together the task force, I mean, I got the document here, and it's not the full document. There's a lot of solid recommendations in this. The homestead exemption is something that you have cited on. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, so very simply, property taxes are too high.
Yes.
So we've got to bring them down. And that's why I brought this bipartisan task force together. It had think tank folks, county commissioners, state officials, representatives from various industry groups to look at this whole problem. And the biggest, strongest recommendation out of there was this homestead rate reduction, which would lower the rate that Montana residents pay on their primary residence. It would also benefit small business, and it would benefit indirectly renters because it would apply to apartments that are rented on a long-term basis. So the question is, who pays for it? Well, it would shift the tax burden for property taxes to out-of-staters with second homes here. And I think most people are accepting of that. It's just the way it is. I'm thrilled. Lou Jones has done a great job leading this effort in the House. I think it's going to come out of the House here in the next day or two,
yeah.
Certainly this week. And then it'll be up to the Senate to consider it. And I'm looking forward to getting it into my desk so I can sign it into law. But that's only half the equation. And this, from this report that you referred to, and it's available up on the web if anybody wants to look at it. The task force did a great thing. One is we're shifting the burden to out-of-staters who have second homes. But the underlying problem is property taxes is how we pay for local expenses. This is the sheriff, county roads, K-12 education. Yep. The state doesn't get property taxes. It goes to the local municipality. And income taxes are what pays for state expenses. So the root problem here in all of this is that over the last 20 years, inflation has averaged a little over 2% a year. Local spending growth in Montana has averaged just over 6% a year every year. So we have excessive spending at the local level. This is large part why property taxes have gone. Certainly appraisals have gone up, but the current law would actually reduce the rate if the counties didn't spend all the money. Well, they have been. Some are better than others. Mm-hmm. But the other recommendations in the report really focus on putting some guardrails on spending growth so that we don't find ourselves in this situation again.
And that's not something where you can just introduce a bill and tell people to stop spending on. It takes a little more collaboration. How is that walking down the road a little bit?
Well, there's a number of things that are being proposed, and they're all in this report.
Yeah.
One, for example, if you look at your property tax bill, a lot of them are voter-elected
initiatives. Yeah.
Like, who doesn't like shade trees? Who doesn't like a new swimming pool? Who doesn't like a new county courthouse? Well, that all adds up, and that's part of the issue. So one of the recommendations that's being considered is potentially for non-essential bond issues to raise the voter threshold to get them approved. There's also other ideas about some of these bond issues come in spring elections. Mm-hmm. Some have said maybe these bond issues only ought to be on the ballot in November when most people are going to vote so the broader group of people can consider them. So there's a bunch of recommendations there. There are also there's a proposal to move the cap for local spending growth. Right now it doesn't apply to newly appraised property. Now this is getting a little wonky, but in our high growth counties, because the spending cap doesn't apply to newly appraised property, essentially, Gallatin, Missoula, Flathead have no cap on spending growth
because
they've got so much new growth. You take a county like Petroleum County where we don't have a lot of new growth, they honestly have to keep their budget to less than half the rate of inflation, which is not enough to maintain the roads and things. So anyway, it's complicated. This is why I'm glad we had some really smart people working on it. The legislature is going to consider all these ideas, and I hope a number of them get to my desk so we can rein in the spending as well.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte here, along with Tim Summers, State Director of AARP Montana.
Yeah, Tom, Governor, thank you. Thank you for your remarks. One of the things that that came out of a survey that we did back in September is that we found that 95% of our members in Montana want to have meaningful and lasting property tax reform. And we believe that House Bill 231 is a good start to that. Is it perfect? Is it the first? Is it the first step? Yes. Is it perfect? No. Absolutely not. Is there more work to be done? Absolutely. But it's a great start.
And Tim, I want to thank you because I think you have 40 or so of your members here today. They're meeting with legislators. I know we're going to have a chance to to meet later today one-on-one. It's so important that people show up and have their voices heard.
Absolutely.
You know, we have no offense, we have lobbyists crawling all over the Capitol. But when real folks show up, the legislators really listen.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that's really actually where AARP's forte comes in, is we don't have a PAC. We don't have the money to pour into lobbying. But what we do have is our membership.
And you know, serving barbecue in the Capitol is pretty smart move on your part.
That's going to happen here about 12 o'clock,
yeah,
I think.
I'm a little bit worried right after the Super Bowl, but, you know, we'll manage.
Governor, again, thanks for being here. I appreciate that. Another thing we're talking about a bit later on will be Medicaid reauthorization, and we'll get into that. I know that you have been a proponent of that proposal. I wanted to kind of talk outside of that a little bit about overall, the 50-plus crowd, again, the research shows that the more you do for that with their considerations, the broad benefit there is to the public as well. What else is on your plate that you think is going to help that 50-plus crowd, so to speak?
The next thing I come to, we talked about property taxes. It's also income tax. Mm-hmm. You know, in Montana, we exempt the first $50,000 of Social Security income, but we still have the highest income tax rate in the Rocky Mountain region. This is why we've made it a priority to bring that down. It's going to help all Montanans. Once you get to $20,000 a year in income, you're at the top rate. And Montana has the highest rate in the whole Rocky Mountain region. This is why we proposed bringing it from 5.9% down to 4.9%. That's something that we're doing. We're looking at how we do licensure in Montana. And historically, we've made it very hard for people to go to work. And we might have a retiree who was a nurse for 30 years, maybe moved to Montana our way of life. And then we make it real that they might want to work part-time at the local clinic, you know, to help in the community and, you know, contribute. Mm-hmm. Or somebody might want to help in a classroom or these sorts of things. So one of the big initiatives is really streamlining and providing reciprocity in licensure with other states. If another state has a regime to authorize someone to do a certain trade, whether it's nursing or teaching or whatever it happens to be, and it's at least as good as our state, why wouldn't we let them work here too?
No shortage of issues that we want to talk about here as we are at the Capitol today. It's Fighting for the 50-plus Day at the Capitol, sponsored by AARP Montana. Yes, they've got a cater lunch. I understand it is by Rockstar Barbecue, and that is a that's going to be a treat from what I hear already. So that is open 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. if you want to come on down and be a part of this. Several representatives are with us here. Tim Summers is co-hosting today, State Director of AARP Montana. Representative Lou Jones joins us again, House District 18, chairs the House Appropriations Committee. And Mary Cafaro is a representative as well, House District 81, and also serves on the Joint Appropriations Committee, Health and Human Services. So we're going to get right into it. First of all, I welcome Representative Cafaro. Hello, Mary. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for your public service. I appreciate
thank
that
you.
As well.
Thank you.
Especially digging into some of these issues that can be thorny at times and not too clear, or they're complicated in a lot of ways,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yes.
And Representative Jones, thank you again for hanging out here for this conversation.
Certainly welcome. Representative, House District 18 and 81 together again. They're just kind of inverses.
18 and 81.
We've been together on a lot of issues for a lot of years.
Well, and I think that's something that people kind of forget about, is that, and as I look at the streaming services and all the sessions, there's a lot more that you guys come together on to fight for. But let's talk about Medicaid reauthorization. Tim, why don't you launch this off? Because it is a big one on the plate of the 50-plus crowd.
When Medicaid expansion was first passed in 2015, AARP was one of the major proponents, and many folks ask, why is AARP involved in Medicaid expansion? Well, bottom line is right now we have 18,500 people, 50 to 64-year-olds, who want to keep working, who need to keep working, but they've lost their health care for whatever reason. Medicaid provides that safety net for them to keep involved in the workforce, etc. So we are right there for the 50 to 64-year-olds. Like I said, 18,000 folks need expansion to keep their coverage going. That's why we're involved.
Representative Cafaro, why don't we start with you? I know that you carried a bill, and you worked with Representative Ed Buttrey, who was unable to make it here today. Apologize for that. Back in 2019, on getting this reauthorized, there was a sunset. That's what brought us to 2025. Talk about the evolution, so to speak, of this need, meeting this need without breaking the bank.
Okay, so I'll start with this session. We had Ed Buttrey's bill on the floor, and it passed with a really good vote. Mm-hmm. So people think, well, that's how it's always been, but I'll take you back. Actually, there was a bill in 2011. There was a bill in 13 that hardly, it came very close. But in 15, Democrats and Republicans came together and passed a bill. So it's 10 years of experience now. And Senator Buttrey at that time was the sponsor. I co-sponsored it. Then fast forward to 2019, we also worked together to negotiate a good bill on behalf of Montanans to renew Medicaid expansion. And now, here we are again, 5 years later. And it's really important to understand that history. And I'm very grateful to Senator Buttrey, initially now representative, for his commitment to making this happen so that tens of thousands of people in all parts of Montana have health care who otherwise wouldn't. And then another person we need to thank is Governor Gianforte for actually putting the funding in his budget. Now, I'll tell you something about money. I'm on the Subcommittee for Health and Human Services, the Subcommittee of Appropriations. And we had an analysis done that said, how much does Medicaid expansion cost the state? This doesn't include the multiplier effect and all the jobs it creates and the health care, how it supports the health care industry. $6 million. The state pays $6 million when you take everything and look at the big picture, the federal match and whatnot. I think that that's a heck of a good deal for tens of thousands of people getting health care and creating thousands and thousands of jobs.
Well, and one of the big things that it also does is it keeps the doors open for rural hospitals.
Yes.
So,
Representative Jones, you've been tracking this as well over those years.
Absolutely.
Your perspective.
From the beginning, while
yes.
Mary and Ed did the deep dives into this and certainly are the detail experts, it is a critical piece of legislation. As always, I look at the numbers, and the numbers are right on. In those states that chose not to expand Medicaid, their rural hospitals closed. We have not lost a single rural hospital. And so we hear myths out there about how super expensive it is. But the truth is, expansion, well, let's do the numbers. 66% on expansion are employed, 10% are students, 13% are permanently disabled, 8% are full caregivers. These aren't people that are on the dole for the most part. I believe the time on expansion is on average less than 24 months for that portion of Medicaid. This is helping those folks get through a tough time. And it's certainly helping those businesses who are looking for healthy employees. And so it's a great program.
And this is what we want is we want priorities to our budgeting. And if we're spending money in places that are not needed, then we don't have money for this kind of priority. And so, Representative Caffaro, you know, talk about making this a priority and then making those numbers work, too, because I think a big part of this is that we've come to understand that we are better off on the front end of healthcare services and getting preventative medicine out there than we are on the back end of it when it comes to how much these will eventually fall into the state coffers anyway.
Okay, so thank you for the question. I have to take it back a little bit to with this group of legislators, Republican and Democrats, that came together initially in 2013 and 15, what is really important to understand is why did we come together on Medicaid expansion? Because back then it was controversial. I know it's hard to believe that health care is controversial, but it was.
Program of 2015 Obamacare is where it came from, yeah.
So when you take it back, why were we so committed? Because we're committed to the people of Montana. We were responsive to what we were hearing back home from people, as well as from the businesses around healthcare, the businesses that employ people who have Medicaid expansion. So I think that that's really important to understand. The other thing is, it's hard to put a price tag on it, but it is very important to the working poor, but also to caregivers. As we know, caregivers in Montana, there's 112,000 family caregivers, and they play a major role in caring for their loved ones. And they should be not punished but rewarded for providing that care, whether it's a woman whose husband has Alzheimer's, or it's a part of the sandwich generation where they have children and they're taking care of their parents, or people who go through the rough, rough times of having a child with severe disabilities. Caregiving is really important, and so we want to support our caregivers. We've made that commitment to do that. We invest in this type of good values, and so I am very, very proud to be a part of this and lucky.
Representative Caffaro, I really appreciate you mentioning caregivers, because let's see what would happen to the caregivers if those rural hospitals closed down. There are so many ways that Medicaid expansion impacts caregivers, but especially those rural hospitals. If they don't have that access, then they're in a world of hurt. Yep.
Now, I opened up a can of worms with this, and I don't have a ton of time for it, so I'm debating it. But people will want to ask the question, where does it end then? Where does the line, where is it appropriately drawn between what government can fund and what should be the responsibility of individuals? And I think that's a fair part of this discussion. And you could also throw that question around and ask, why don't we just all have single-payer coverage as well? I mean, there's the extremes, and we don't have a ton of time to discuss them. But I'm curious, and Mary or Lou, if you want to pick up on this, how that there's a foundation for this overall discussion of government services when it comes to healthcare.
Well, there is a foundation, but something to remember is we're talking about Medicaid expansion. It is a set population. Again, the overwhelming majority are working. Some are going to school, trying to improve their lives and create upward mobility for their families. And also, there are some who, like we talked about, are caregivers. There's a very small population that we don't have information on. It is a set population. It is not growing, and you'll hear that argument that, oh, where single payer. Single payer is off the table. And one thing I want to say, as far as rural Montana goes, what's really important too, which we haven't talked about, yes, rural hospitals are important, but also suicide. Suicide in rural Montana is 3 times higher than in urban Montana, and there are more people in rural areas who are covered by Medicaid expansion than in urban areas, and that's so important to understand. So we are looking at a program that's very fair, treats all Montanans the same, creates more affordability for life in general, and we want to reinforce folks who are working and taking care of their family members.
Thank you. Representative Jones, go ahead.
This program worked out as one of the best designed in the country, in a large part to the work done by Representative Caffaro and Representative Buttrey. It simply works. It's currently touching about 76,000 Montanans. You've heard the stats of how many are working. You've heard the stats of how many are how big an impact it is to businesses, and it's providing that hand up. Most folks are not spending a long time on there. They're getting this insurance, they're getting better at their job, and they're moving up and getting employees sponsored. So it is how a government program should work. It has all those characteristics that make it stand out as one of the best designs in this country for a good, conservative, well-thought-out program. And I'm very appreciative to the work of folks that spent so much time on this to make it work that way.
And that's what makes it a responsible spend of government funding as well, in my mind. It's working. So, and it's penny-wise as well. Representative Caffaro, thank you so much for your public service. Representative Jones, thank you guys as well. I appreciate that. All right, welcome back here.
Hey, good to see you.
You too, Senator Mike Yankovich is with us.
To Helena.
To Helena, Montana.
Helena,
Jim
yes.
Summers alongside State Director AARP Montana. Mike, Senator Yankovich.
Southside Mike.
Yeah.
Call me Southside Mike.
Yeah. Congratulations on that Senate win, and now you're into it. This is the session going on. You've got something though, a bill that we want to talk about, family caregiving. Wrap us up. I know we'll get to the end of the show and don't have
a
ton of time.
Well, hey, I'm shout out to Taylor to your radio program. You guys do an awesome job. Thank you. I want to give a shout out to our president Matt Regeer, awesome leader for our Senate. And we got great legislators on both sides of the aisle. We're working hard. Anyone here is dedicated to investing. So I'm plowing into presumptive eligibility, helping seniors with fixed income to get help, to get Medicaid support right away. This is not Medicaid expansion, but it's really just getting them the opportunity in days rather than weeks to get support, to get help. Helping mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, living in an apartment, maybe living with their son or daughter. And something happens, a son or daughter has a heart attack, they're alone by themselves, they need a little bit of aid with a nurse. And so this presumptive eligibility kicks in. They can apply rather than waiting a long time and maybe get that nurse to come in and help them. So it's a win. It's a win for the client, the individual, the senior. It's a win for the state. We're saving a lot of money instead of mom or dad breaking their hip, going to the hospital, going to nursing home, way more, a lot of money. So I'm just grateful for the support of AARP, grateful for the support of my, it went past public health really well, and I'm going to be on the floor today, and I'm very confident that we're going to get it passed.
Senate Bill 72 is
absolutely
on the floor today.
Yeah. Yes, on the floor today.
Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That.
Thank
so we'll back up a little bit about family caregiving and this bill a little bit. You tried to address, I think, the immediate expense that comes to families as well. How else does the state need to come alongside and make sure that we have good relationships, but also we're able to take care of our elders?
Well, you know, certainly to acknowledge AARP and Kristen, who is one of your lobbyists here, really doing a great job helping out, connecting. So that's the number one thing to answer your question is, if there's no relationship, it's really hard to understand what you need. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are here that may not be elderly or connected to an elderly person, so we have to educate them. That's a big part of getting money forward, getting things passed. If we need to create that kind of whether it be a connection or a conduit. And along with that, then we create an awareness. This is one of the first bills that I can recall in recent time about elderly. We have 240,000 elders in our state of Montana, about one quarter to one fifth of our population. We have a huge spike in a growth in our elderly, and a lot of people aren't having kids. A lot of young people aren't having kids. So rather than a triangle form, it's more of a box form. So we really had to have to drill down and focus more on helping the elderly, helping those with fixed income. And that's part of educating people about what's the need out there.
That's how fast it goes, you know.
Yeah.
It was at the end of the show here. Thank you. We're going to pick
you
up
bet.
On this,
you
though.
Bet. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Shout out to AARP. Thank
Appreciate
you for all your
it.
Hard work.
Thank you.
And again, thank you and Taylor and Tom for all your support. God bless you. God bless Montana.
Right on. Yeah.
Thank you.
Again,
thank you, Senator.
Southside Mike, right?
Southside Mike.
out of the Billings area, but state senator as well, and hitting that floor with a Senate Bill 72 on. Tim Summers, thank you so much as well for joining us. You guys, we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.